When the Montana skeptic tells you that he wants to do a podcast at 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday, you say, okay, and you get your ass out of bed, you get a nice 24-ounce Wawa coffee like I have, and you prepare to just let the godfather of Tesla skepticism speaketh and doeth as he please. This episode, like all episodes of the QTR podcast, is brought to you by my patrons. Patrons are people that sign up and donate a monthly recurring sum to my Patreon. They are what keep me going, keep me booking guests, keep content coming. So if you've enjoyed content lately or ever, don't be a freeloader. Sign up. Send me your hard-earned money, which I will then turn around and spend at local watering holes. At least I'm honest about it, folks. I'm not like these fucking public companies that write general corporate purposes in their 8K. I could tell you it's going to general corporate purposes. Mostly it's going to booze. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an understanding of honesty between us that I love. Let's shout out the people that make this podcast possible. Then I'll give you my two rules for life, and then we'll get going. First and foremost, my friends over at the Sang Lucci Steam Room. Sang Lucci is one of the original OGs of options trading. I have known this guy for 7 years. He's one of the sharpest guys I've met on the street. And what they do at the Sang Lucci Steam Room is they follow big money into options flow that can help you try to get an idea of where the money that you don't have and you're trying to follow is heading ahead of possibly good news, bad news, who knows. But it gives you equities to take a look at based on volume and moves in the options market that they have a proprietary tool that points out. And the Steam Room, if you follow them on Twitter, at Sang Lucci, at Wall Street Jesus, those guys are great follows. One of the first people I followed on financial Twitter, and also right now, so they are doing a master course on options trading and market psychology, which you can get in my podcast description. They're also doing something called the 3LT playbook, which is the three steps that Lucci used to become a seven-figure trader. You can check out the link to that also in my podcast description. This podcast is also brought to you by my friend Pete over at The Trader's Path. The Trader's Path is a brand new service for traders where there's going to be zero bullshit and all content. Pete is not trying to front run your trades. He's not trying to sell you shit you don't need. He is posting live webcasts every day of his trading. He is posting morning watch lists of the stocks he's looking at. He has investor advocacy, investor education, The Trader's Path, brand new trading service. You can sign up for them in my podcast description as well. This podcast is also brought to you by my friends over at Rumorhound. Rumorhound.ai is an innovative piece of artificial intelligence software that is going to help you distinguish which merger and acquisition rumors that you see often in the news, on Twitter, in chat rooms, which ones may be worth paying attention to and which ones may be worth not paying attention to. So hopefully you can allocate your capital in a little bit of a wiser fashion. That is, of course, financial terms for lose your fucking money. Anyways, allocate your capital. Listen, I'm not running $2 billion here, all right? I'm running a podcast. But Rumorhound is an awesome tool to have in your arsenal of tools. I have checked it out personally. I love it. The guys over there are huge supporters of the podcast. So send them some love. Check them out in the podcast description as well. Additionally, my friends over at Focused Compounding are a great follow. You can follow them on Twitter, YouTube, and check out their podcast. All three links are in my podcast description. And the only thing these guys focus on at Focused Compounding are investment ideas that the rest of the market has missed. That is it. When I asked them, what do you want me to say? They said, that's it. So that's what they do. Check out, they have an awesome Twitter feed. Their Twitter feed is replete with ideas and pointing out little niche pieces of the market that people may not have seen. So check them out at Focused Compounding on Twitter. Links in my podcast description. Finally, this podcast brought to you by my friends over at Hella Bacon, who shoot machine guns from helicopters in Texas. My friends at Corvus Gold, my friend Piggly Wiggly, Nathan Michaud over at Investors Underground and Traders for a Cause, Chris Boas, Ken R., Chris Bede, Nicholas Parks, Matthew Zimmer, my friend Russ Valenti. And before we get started, we'll shout out a couple of my latest patrons since the last podcast, where Whitney Webb just destroyed it, went bananas. Michael Kovac, BG, Sin, my buddy Edward Hubbard, I just checked in with you, Ethan Parker, Gary Dubisky, Greg Trebs, Craig Schwartz, Dominic Reinman, Steve Lekkowski, and Carson. I see all you guys. And I still see some patrons that have been with me for a while, like Pivotal Capital, Brian Gray, my friend, the Death of Rats, Carter Bell is still in the house, Glenn Tongue, I still see you, Dale Short, Nathan Weiss, I appreciate you guys very much, Value Trap, Adita Agarwal, Wouter Vernderlin, I appreciate you, Brian Hall, and Joe Savage, we'll leave it there for today. Finally, Jordan Peterson's got 13 rules for life. Here's my two rules for life. Number one, this is not investment advice. I'm not an investment advisor. Do your motherfucking research elsewhere, folks. Do not listen to this podcast if you're going to be acting on it in an investment manner, which could cause me to get sued and or have you bitch and moan to me. I'm not interested in either of those things. Finally, this, by the way, I don't hold any licenses, registrations, etc., so I am not a financial advisor, and that's all you need to know about it. Finally, I do encourage a two-drink minimum for this podcast. It's Saturday, and even though it is 7:30 in the morning, I have no doubt my degenerate followers and listeners are already probably well on top of the two-drink minimum. You guys all have problems, you fucks. All right, let's get started. I have with me on the line a man that needs no introduction, but I'm going to introduce him anyways. And it goes like this, the Montana Skeptic. And if you need to know anything else, just Google him, because we don't have the time to go through it this morning. How are you, my kind friend? What's going on a Saturday morning?
It's early Saturday morning, that's for sure. And I'm swimming in black coffee, so I think I'm doing fine.
Oh, we're both having black coffee this morning, which is fantastic. Listen, here's something I want to ask of you right off the bat, my friend. If you would be kind enough, for people that maybe have never heard Montana Skeptic before on the podcast, before we get into where I think I know we're going to go today, can you just give me 30 seconds or a minute just about yourself for the listeners, for somebody that's never heard of you before, and also just about what situations and circumstances maybe you want to discuss today?
Sure. So I'm one of many people who writes as a sidelight hobby, and I wrote for several years about Tesla at a website called Seeking Alpha. I had a very modest, albeit slowly growing, following of people who read the articles. They were generally tedious and lengthy and concerned details about 10Qs and 10Ks, and until one day Elon Musk decided that I had done something to offend him, phoned my boss, essentially threatened to drag my boss into a lawsuit and to sue me. I'm still waiting to be served with that lawsuit. By the way, Elon, I'll accept service of process whenever you're ready. He transformed me from really a nobody into a minor accidental internet celebrity of the Tesla Q variety. And that's who I am, and because of this celebrity status bestowed on me by the great charlatan, I have had the ability to help others, most recently Skabushka, Randy Pothy. We can talk about that today. And I was trained as a lawyer. I was a commercial trial lawyer for almost 30 years, and bring that background to the table, and just a regular guy enjoying his black coffee on a Saturday morning.
I think that was actually quite good. So listen, I told you yesterday I was going to let you dictate the pace and pretty much direct us where we want to go this morning. I'm guessing you want to address the Skabushka controversy. Do you want to do that first, or do you have some other things you want to talk about first?
No, I think Skabushka is a great thing to talk about first.
Okay, so take it. Just give my listeners again who don't know you, don't know Skabushka, the 30-second exposition on what happened, and then we can go from there.
It's going to take probably more than 30 seconds. But
all right.
Skabushka, like many of the so-called Tesla Q posters at Twitter and elsewhere, wished to be anonymous. He made a name for himself more than a year ago after Elon Musk famously claimed that one thing that everyone could have absolutely no doubt about, could be completely confident about, was that Tesla would be producing 10,000 Model 3s per week by the end of 2018. He had some camera equipment, went to the factory, put the equipment, I believe, outside the factory grounds, though Tesla has confiscated and converted it, to monitor production. And he was counting cars. He was the first to observe the tent structure and illustrate what it looked like inside. And this put him on Tesla's radar in a big way. They have known who he was for a long time. They had his driver's license. And a few months ago in April, Skabushka, who lives in the San Francisco area, was driving on Interstate 880 and notices a Tesla Model 3 with manufacturer plates that has two cameras mounted on the roof and has another camera mounted inside. And this is 5 days in advance of the so-called Tesla Investor Autonomy Day. And Skabushka, remembering the infamously misleading painted black video that Tesla released in 2016 with all sorts of extravagant promises about autopilot, none of which have come to pass, thought, this car may be laying down some tape for the upcoming event. I'm going to document it. He followed the car for half an hour or so, took photos, posted them at Twitter. It was a real news story. In fact, Electric, which is, you know, known as much as anything as a very pro-Tesla propaganda outlet, initially reported it as a news story, total news story, and in fact made note of the hollow promises from 2016. A couple of days later, I think on the 19th, Tesla went and got what's called a temporary restraining order against Hothi. They hired lawyers, they had witnesses, the most important of whom was not even present for any of the events, swear out declarations claiming that this guy was threatening workplace violence, okay, and sued him. They knew exactly how to contact him. They had lots of contact information. They had his address. They knew his Twitter handle, etc. But they chose not to. They chose to go to the courthouse, make their allegations with no notice, and got a TRO slapped on him. And at this point, he is now accused of being a homicidal maniac. Of course, the Tesla flying monkeys are unleashed, and they attack him all over social media as a terrorist and a dangerous felon and criminal. And it was clear he needed help. He needed to have good counsel and legal counsel. And several people said to me, you know, would you step up and help this guy? People may contribute to a GoFundMe if you put your name behind it. So that's, you know, that's how the story started. Of course, I've never met Randy Pothi. I wasn't present when these events took place. I couldn't say whether, you know, exactly what happened, but I did know this. I did know that what happened was not workplace violence, okay? The statute in California about workplace violence discusses things that happen other than for a legitimate purpose. And there's no doubt in my mind, Hothi is a citizen journalist. What he was doing was for a legitimate purpose. He was not out there threatening employees. This was not a guy going postal. At most, if indeed his car swerved in the way Tesla alleged, then they should have reported it to the highway patrol and had the guy ticketed for, you know, moving violation. This was a traffic ticket case turned into a smear on a good human being. So I decided I was going to help him raise the money. We raised funds. I helped him locate legal counsel. He challenged Tesla, and the court, you know, the TRO is the first step, and you're allowed in California to get one with no notice to the opposing party. Why should that be? Because in a workplace violence case, you know, you've got workers. There's not much time. If somebody gets shot up in the workplace, that's a problem. Or you have domestic abuse where one spouse is threatening another and you want to quickly protect the one who's threatened or his or her children from violence like that. So California has this expedited procedure in those limited instances. But even there is some due process later. You have a full-blown evidentiary hearing called an injunction hearing, where both sides have to be present and get to produce their evidence. And the side that's seeking the relief has to show by clear and convincing evidence that they are entitled to it, that this violence or threatened violence took place, etc. So Hothi got legal counsel. The legal counsel said, you know, Judge, we recognize that in these truncated California procedures, where, you know, you don't get the full due process of a trial because these are emergency situations, that discovery, that is forcing the other side to show you their evidence in advance, isn't usually allowed. But here, Tesla can prove its case unequivocally with real-time photography, audio recordings, video recordings. The car had two cameras mounted outside. It had another one inside. They have video and audio tracks. The car itself has 8 integrated cameras. Tesla boasts about how those cameras are used to gather all this data that it uses for its autonomous driving efforts. So, and the people inside the car had cell phones and they were making recordings. Let's have a look at those, the ones that show Randy Pothi following, and let's see this dangerous behavior. And Tesla had alleged an earlier event in a parking lot, and they claimed that Hothi drove at a high rate of speed and recklessly and hit a Tesla employee, and Hothi swears that's absolutely not true. Let's go ahead, and by the way, the police reports support Hothi, the police investigations, the incident reports are consistent with Hothi's account. We were able to obtain those later. And we said, since Tesla has video of that as well, you know, there are security cameras mounted in the parking lot, let's take a look. And if this guy is this dangerous person that they say, they've got the evidence. So at a minimum, let's see that evidence. And the judge said, you know what? That's right. You have to show by clear and convincing evidence. Yes, typically we don't allow discovery, but I have discretion. And here it's evident that Tesla could never prove its case with Hothi saying these things didn't happen. So let's see the best evidence here. You turn over those recordings. Well, now, first Tesla shows up at the first hearing, which got postponed because the court was so congested that day they couldn't reach the parties, with no witnesses. Okay, the only witness their attorney brings is from their in-house legal department, who clearly is not a fact witness. And we're scratching our head saying, how is Tesla going to prove its case if it's not going to subject any of these witnesses to examination here? And the judge, you know, at the end of it says, we'll have to do this again. Let's find a date that works. They settled on a date in July. And he said, send me letter briefs and brief this issue of the discovery that Hothi wants, and I'll make a decision. And by the way, Tesla, you know, do you think you're going to prove your case without having witnesses here? I don't think so. So Tesla fires the first set of attorneys. This issue gets briefed. The judge issues an order on July 1st, and he says, look, Hothi wants a few things. Like, he wants your file on him. He wants to see any medical report of this guy who claims he was injured, okay? I'm not going to allow that, but it's relevant, but this is a truncated procedure. But I am going to require you to produce all the photographic and audio and video recordings of these events, starting from a time on, you know, for the second one on the highway. Pick it up, you know, 30 seconds before you guys are aware Hothi's following you, and end it 20 seconds after you see that he's gone. And then that'll give us all the evidence we need. Well, Tesla objects. We're going to have to turn over confidential proprietary information. And the court says, hey, no, you know, you talk about confidential proprietary information, but you haven't described what it is. So come back and tell me what it is. So Tesla fires the first set of lawyers. A new set of lawyers comes and says, Judge, you need to reconsider your order. You know, it's wrong. We disagree with it. But among other things, there's an audio track from inside the car. That camera mounted inside the car recorded not only video, but audio of the three people doing the testing. And that will have confidential information on it. And also it will have things that are very private, and we want to protect the privacy of our employees. So the judge thinks about all this. Hothi files a response, and he says, hey, I'll tell you what. If the audio track has things you think are confidential and proprietary, because, you know, they're Tesla's business secrets, or if it has things that are purely personal and private for these three people in the car, who, by the way, knew they were being recorded, so what are they going to be talking about?
Right.
Then you know what? Designate those, and we'll agree with you that none of that comes into evidence.
Right.
And if we can't agree, you can present it to the judge in advance. Tesla never follows up on that offer. Then the judge issues a second order, and he says, here's what. I'm confirming my first order. You turn over all that stuff, and you've told me you've got this confidential proprietary information, but you haven't said what it is. You haven't made any showing. File a proper motion. Tell me what it is. In all events, I will review all the recordings that anybody proposes to introduce into evidence in camera, that is, before the hearing starts. And by the way, Tesla tried to keep the press and public out of the hearing, right? They've been consistently trying to do that. The judge wasn't buying that. He says, I'll take this stuff back to my chambers and I will look at it in camera, it's called, back in my chambers. And if I determine it's not relevant for any reason, then it's not coming in. So Tesla's offered all these protections. And of course, once the judge makes that ruling, Tesla, the game is up. They have to turn it over. So instead, they drop their suit. So that, I'm sorry, that's a long-winded history.
No, that's awesome.
And of course, there's a subsequent development. But there you go. That's the history.
So if you're brand new to the podcast and you're not familiar with the situation, there's a gentleman who's a critic of the company, and Tesla hits him with this restraining order, alleges all of these things, drags him, you know, through this legal process, and then when it comes time to turn over the evidence to support their claims, they can't do it, or they choose not to do it.
They write a letter to the court. Dear Judge, we see that you've ruled against us again, and we regret that you continue to misapprehend the law. You know, you're such it's a shame you don't know the law better.
They insulted the judge as well, did they?
Well, you know, look, basically they're saying you made a bad ruling, and because you're now going to expose our employees to have their privacy infringed upon. Okay, no mention anymore of any confidential or proprietary data. Well, you know, at Tesla, we care so much about our employees. That's evident, isn't it, from all the safety violations and the way that we, track them and spy on them. So we're going to protect their privacy and drop the case. And besides, we think this son of a bitch, we think we've scared him enough anyway. And he won't mess with us again. And if he does, you can be sure we'll be ready to drop the hammer on him. And so we're dropping our case. That's how it went down.
And Hothi's history basically could be best described as, you know, an interested Tesla skeptic that, you know, happened to be of close location to the premises and was doing everything within legal means that he could do to try to prove or disprove, you know, the statements coming out of the company. He was doing basically due diligence and as you said, citizen journalism, right?
Completely. And by the way, Randeep Hothi, I have yet to meet him, but I've learned things about him. One, because I've talked to him a lot on the phone. It would be hard to meet someone with a more gentle personality than him. He is a non-confrontational person. When he posted the photos of the cars on the highway, for example, he redacted the faces of the people in it to protect their privacy.
Right.
When he was confronted in the parking lot to avoid any kind of confrontation, he slowly drove away, and the police report confirms that, by the way. He's a kind, gentle person. He happens to be a Sikh, and so his head is in a turban or whatever. I'm not sure what the technical term is. And so, of course, that led all the flying monkeys to say, this man is a radical terrorist, fully misapprehending who Sikhs are and what they're all about. He's a graduate student in like some branch of philosophy concerned with the philosophy of religion, a graduate student at the University of Michigan. And of course, the flying monkeys, some of them had to then contact the University of Michigan and seek to have him expelled. Are you aware that you are that you have in your ranks as a graduate student someone who is a homicidal maniac? You need to expel him immediately. That this was the kind of attacks that happened, all completely predictable. Okay, Tesla knew exactly. It knows what Clean Technica is going to write. It knows what Inside EVs and Teslarati and all these nasty people like, I think his name is Charles Moore, this Evanex. They are reliable smear mongers and did exactly what Tesla knew they would do to destroy this guy's reputation. And then rather than show the good, show that he did the things that you said, give him a chance to vindicate his good name. Nope, we're dropping the case and no one will ever see this evidence.
Right.
I'm telling you, Chris, there is something on that audio recording that Tesla very badly did not want made public.
Yeah, certainly that seems like it would be the case, right? I mean, even putting that aside, you know, you make these allegations to obtain this temporary restraining order ahead of a crucial, you know, quote unquote crucial event that the company was holding, this autonomous investor day, which went over with a whimper anyways. But you make these allegations and at the very least you should have to put up the evidence to show it. I mean, yeah. I know that's not how the legal system works. I know you can bow out if you would like they have, but I still think they should be held to kind of prove their initial allegations. And never yeah. mind the fact that Hothi has now been dragged through this legal process, which, you know, had he not have the backing of the Tesla Q community, would have cost him probably a significant sum of money out of pocket.
Yeah, he couldn't have honestly, you know, well, while his attorney's fees had been less than the amount we raised, thankfully, and probably much less than Tesla has spent, well, much less than Tesla has been billed. I suspect they're not paying their attorneys promptly, and they're probably, you know, trying to get the invoices sliced like they always do. But in all events, no, without the GoFundMe, Hothi would have been unable to defend himself. Now, the latest, as you know, Chris, is that he has filed a motion for fees. He's asked the court. There's a statute in California that says, look, if somebody engages in actions or tactics in litigation that are frivolous or in bad faith, then the victimized party can seek to recover its reasonable costs, sure. including its attorney's fees. And so that motion got filed earlier this week. It's supported by sworn declarations. And, you know, we say the action is frivolous because it was always clear and certainly clear to Tesla from the outset that Hothi was engaged in a legitimate purpose. He was doing citizen journalism. Now, if he did it in a manner that was reckless, well, go get him slapped with a moving violation. But this is not workplace violence. Tesla knew that. This was an attempt to smear the good name of Randy Pothi. And they pursued it knowing they would never show the evidence they had. They thought, well, you know, these proceedings don't require any discovery. We'll just keep the evidence to ourselves. We won't bring any witnesses to the hearing, and we will smear him in that way. And the thing that Tesla didn't count on was that there was a judge in California who said, hold it, wait a minute. Right. Wait, you have to show by clear and convincing evidence. You're telling me you're going to do that without witnesses? You're telling me you have evidence that is dispositive and crucial and vital and will decide the entire case, and you don't want to share it? Something is wrong with this picture. You're going to turn that evidence over. Well, Judge, we want you to clarify and reconsider. Sorry, you're turning it over. Okay, off they go, right? I mean, so it was very fortunate that we drew a judge who respected the clear and convincing evidence
sure.
Standard that California has.
Sure.
And I'm very grateful. If you read the orders that the judge wrote, I think one was dated July 1 and the second one was July 26th. They're very carefully written. They're beautifully written. They state the facts carefully. They state the law carefully. And, you know, you can't ask for anything more than that, than to draw a judge that cares about the rule of law. So.
Well, that's enormous, and it's also got to be a nice breath of fresh air to know that there are, you know, judges out there like that, and I'm sure there's many of them. You know, I feel like oftentimes all the stories we hear are the judges that seem to sway in the other direction or seem to, you know, get into the headlines for the wrong reason. So it's nice to know that, you know, the judge was not only able to apply the law like you're saying, but also seem to have a modicum of common sense, which is really all it takes in this instance, if you ask me. They allege something. There's a ubiquitous number of cameras on the scene. You know, show us one of them. Show us, you know, show us some of the evidence. And it just
most of the judges, trial court, appellate court, state court, federal court that I have been in front of in my career are really good judges, mm-hmm. like this judge in California. They are good judges. A judge like United States District Court Allison J. Nathan, I'm sure she's a good judge, but you know what would have done her a world of good? She had no experience on the bench when she was appointed, no state court experience, no trial experience. It would have done her a world of good to have to sit in this California court where the judges are hearing TROs with people. It's like Judge Judy. People are shouting at each other, and the poor trial judge has to get them focused on the evidence and focused on the standard. A few months of that would have given her a much better judicial temperament and made her, I think, a better judge in the contempt proceedings than she was.
Tell people who don't know who Judge Allison Nathan is and how she kind of plays into the Tesla skepticism story.
Sure. Judge Nathan is a United States District Court judge here in the Southern District of New York. And she was assigned the Tesla case when the SEC sued Elon Musk and Tesla for the famous funding secured fraud. And when the SEC later filed a contempt motion, because in the consent judgment, Elon Musk had agreed to get certain kinds of communications pre-cleared by a committee that was advised by legal counsel. He had failed to do so, and he had made a claim that was not only not cleared but was material and was false. And the SEC said, "Judge, you need to hold him in contempt." And the judge, had a hearing and entertained a lot of briefing, and finally said, "I need you guys to put on your reasonableness pants and come up with a new consent judgment that's even more clear than the first one." And so the case kind of died with a whimper, with Elon Musk feeling entirely vindicated. And that's who Judge Nathan is. I'm sure she's a very good person and a very good judge. She just, as I've told you before, most judges I've been in front of would have hung Elon Musk by his toenails for what was an absolutely clear, flagrant, contemptuous violation of the consent judgment.
Sure. And, lest we forget from the get-go, I mean, this is a public company CEO, okay, where you have regular everyday investors, people's pension funds, 401ks, index funds, all tied to the stock. And he goes out and he fakes a, $75 billion buyout of his company. And pretty much, barring the terms of the new consent decree, gets away with it. It's, for those new to the story, it was, for many of us, one of the most egregious examples of securities fraud I think I have ever seen since I've been following the market. I don't want to speak on your behalf, but the fact that it happened and now it's over and he's kind of still the CEO and nothing really happened is a strange set of circumstances. And now you talk about Hothi and Skabushka, which is his Twitter alias. And if you're wondering why there is a growing group of people that are skeptical about the company, it's these types of instances, plus the company's inability to consistently turn a profit after claiming that it would many times, that has given these, has kind of empowered skeptics and people to push back on what Elon Musk says and what skeptics say. And I have a feeling, Mr. Fossey, that, it won't be too much longer that the public starts to get a little bit wiser to why there is a growing group of skeptics surrounding Tesla and these types of bullying tactics that have been kind of going on in the background now, right? We've kind of been in the trenches here over the last couple of years with these instances like Skabushka being a great microcosm of several other instances that have happened with whistleblowers. These things have all kind of been happening in the trenches, and I think when the general public catches on to exactly what's going on behind the scenes and why people are skeptical to begin with, and they turn around and review interviews like the one we're doing today and the supporting documentation, et cetera, that I'll post, I think it's going to blow people's minds. I think this is going to be an instance where people look back and say, again, as often happens, how did we miss it? How did we let this go on for so long?
Okay, well, a few things. First, yes, you're going to post. I've given you a link to the pleadings, which were put up by a website called Plainsight, which is run by a guy named Aaron Greenberg.
Greenspan.
I do that frequently. Aaron Greenspan. Fascinating guy. Anyway, a very valuable site, a very valuable service, this Plainsight. And you can look at the document there. I think it's document number 55 on his docket. In this case, is that motion for fees The first few pages are notices of the hearing and a form of proposed order that we ask the court to consider. It will, of course, write its own order in its own way. But starting at page 11 is the motion itself, where in 15 pages we lay out the basis for seeking an award of a costs, including attorney's fees. And then following that are the sworn declarations. They're under oath, and they attach evidence that we think is material for the judge to consider in this. It's a big job to give the judge. I'm sure he hates this case. It's a lot of work, and no doubt Tesla will file something to respond. Though if they were smart, they'd say, I'll tell you what, we'll just write you a check for what you ask for, right. so we don't keep running up the legal fees here.
Right.
But they're not smart. I want to talk about, speaking of Aaron Greenspan, he had a wild email exchange with Elon Musk recently, and there's several parts of it I want to highlight. In one of them, Greenspan said to Musk, autopilot is dangerous, basically. And so Musk wrote back. He said, the data is unequivocal that autopilot is safer than human driving by a significant margin. It is unethical and false of you to claim otherwise. In doing so, you are endangering the public. Okay, Mr. Greenspan. And then he said, as for the people you mentioned below, and I think Greenspan mentioned Martin Tripp and Christina Balin, I think her name is. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And among others, Randy Pothy. He says they have actively harassed and, in the case of Pothy, almost killed Tesla employees. What was a sideswipe when Pothy hit one of our people could easily have been a death with 6 inches of difference. Okay? That's what Elon Musk wrote after they dismissed the case. Here he's back again, smearing Randy Pothy. I mean, you know, if Pothy didn't already have a malicious prosecution claim, and I think he might, and if he didn't have a defamation claim, well, he certainly does now, as do Martin Tripp, as does Christina Bailey. You know, this guy is an unhinged idiot. You know, people talk about him as a genius. There's no corporate counsel in the world that would allow somebody to write an email like this, especially after you've just dismissed a case and, you know, maybe dodged the bullet of having to produce incriminating evidence. And now you're giving the people brand new claims against you and you're continuing to smear them. You know, and this, I know this was like written at some late hour. It simply boggles the mind to think how unhinged this guy is. But there he's back again. There's no stopping him. And the board of directors is copied, by the way, on all of this. This is now an exhibit. It's Aaron Greenspan was kind enough to do a declaration saying, I'm attaching a true and correct portion of some email correspondence I had with Elon Musk. And that's part of our claim for the fees. So again, thank you very much, Elon Musk, for helping make our motion even stronger. The doctrine of unintended consequences is lost on Elon Musk.
Well, I think even more baffling is how long, okay, when you look back at, all right, hey, public company CEO that fakes a buyout offer, a $75 billion buyout offer for a public company, you know, billions of dollars in stock is transacted on that, gets a slap on the wrist, comes out publicly, calls Vern Unsworth a pedophile, the guy who helped the Thai cave rescue. All right, that's going to trial now, I think, is where we're at on the docket there. Has come out and now is alleging these things against Pothy after this case has been dismissed. When is the public and when are this guy's close confidants and the public going to stop making excuses for him? That's my question. I mean, when you have the money he does, there's always going to be somebody that will go to bat for you in hopes that, hey, they're going to, you know, have one hand in your wallet. But when is the public, the media, the financial news media, when are these people going to stop making excuses for Musk's behavior?
Yeah, some of them never. But you know, I was heartened to see the WeWork IPO get announced this week.
Oh, God.
Because a lot of the financial press is suddenly saying, WeWork, whoa. I mean, this company has losses that exceed revenues. Right. It has some new community adjusted EBITDA. And the self-dealing of Adam Neumann and his family is extraordinary. And he's talking about, you know, community values, and it's all a lot of hogwash. And then you say, well, you know, actually, I know another company like that. The amount of money that Adam Neumann and his wife have pickpocketed from WeWork is a magnitude less than what the insiders of Tesla have carted away. The self-dealing of Adam Neumann and his wife is trivial and inconsequential compared to the self-dealing of Elon Musk and Kimball Musk and Peter Rive and Lyndon Rive, if that's how you pronounce their names, from the SolarCity bailout. The record of losing money that WeWork has is nothing compared to Tesla's 16 straight years of GAAP losses. You know, maybe people will start drawing the parallels.
The question is, what the hell is it going to take, right? What brick wall does this company, and if not the company, does the market need to run into to jar something loose? Like, I'm not expecting the average retail mom and pop investor to get it immediately. I'm not expecting the general public, who has, for the most part, had a love affair with Elon Musk over the last 15 years. You know, he's making cameos in movies, and you know, people are dressing up for him as Halloween, dressing up as him for Halloween. You know, I'm okay with that. I don't expect the general populace to get it. But the question is, in terms of the stock, the way that it's valued, and you obviously bring up WeWork, which is a giant shitburger in terms of pretty much any financial way you can look at it.
Now, look, you had gone so long without using language that my, you know, people are going to – you're doing so well today, Chris.
I was purposely trying to do that too. I just – and then I turned back into myself. I'm sorry.
All right. Oh, it's okay. I like who you are, but we're going to keep this one, you know, G-rated.
You got it, yes, from this point forward. You're like the only person, you know, that I would take that advice from. Anybody else?
Well, I don't want you to stop being you, but actually you're even better when you're doing it this way. So it's good.
Well, you're spoken like the careful and calculated and measured individual that many of us know you to be. So my question is, you know, what is it going to take for reality to kind of hit?
Well, of course, you know, this stock continues to trade at absurdly high levels. By the way, it's, you know, it's trading about $80 a share less than when Elon Musk doxed me. Okay, or he and his minions, I should say, doxed me. But it's a crazy stock to own if you're a buy and hold person. It's never going to generate any revenue. But you may be hearing my coffee maker going off back there. So now it's starting to, we're in cool down mode. That's always bad. Here's what I think. It takes time. You got to play this as a long game, and it could all come crashing down tomorrow, but it's just going to take time. Tesla's got plenty of cash from the latest capital raise. It's slashing its CapEx. It's forcing its Chinese equipment vendors and its Chinese part makers to bear the cost of the equipment and to amortize it as they sell parts back to Tesla. So, you know, again, mortgaging the future for the present. But Q3 is going to be a disappointment to anybody who thinks Tesla is going to be profitable. For one thing, I doubt they will achieve even the number of deliveries they did in Q2. If they do achieve it, it will be only by slashing prices even further. It's already clear that the ASP, the average sales price or average transaction price for their cars, will be lower in Q3. That means, you know, they're delivering these SR Plus cars finally in Europe. And even in Europe, the sales are way down compared to the comparable months in Q2. But the SR Plus car has got, you know, no margin. It's just a break-even car at best. It's a money loser when you add in OPEX. So you're going to see in Q3, for the first time, year-over-year shrinkage, certainly in revenues, certainly in profits, which, remember, in Q3 they showed a profit. I think it was like $300 million. that will go to a big loss, I think, in this Q3, unless they recognize lots of deferred revenue for full self-driving, which would be a dubious thing to do. But the growth story will be over in Q3. And so Tesla will have to start talking about, oh, Shanghai's about to come online. Their sales in China have been dreadful. I mean, I think they sold like 1,800 Model 3s in China in July. Terrible numbers. They're going to be building the cars in China by doing knockdown kits shipped over from the United States to China for the first few months. All the batteries are going to have to come from the United States. So the cells will be made in Nevada, and the modules assembled, and you'll ship these things over. Please, I hope none of them lights up, or that would be the end of that vessel. It's hard to see how they make any money in China, which is already flooded with EVs, where the EV makers are suffering right now, where all the car makers are suffering because demand is much lower. Anyway, you'll see a shrinkage story finally. They'll have the Model Y narrative. They'll have the Shanghai narrative. The stories will continue. But there are other things happening. You know, to its credit, Tesla delivered more Model 3s than many of us thought it could. How did it do that? It did it by doing it without the required infrastructure of delivery people, of quality control people, and of service people. And now they are paying for that. There's a stunning video that I asked you to link to here. It's on YouTube, and it's from a German company.
Oh yeah, Next Move.
Next Move.
Yeah.
And the owner of the company couldn't be a bigger Tesla fan, could not possibly be a bigger EV fan. And he describes his company's history with Tesla for the past several years and how he ordered 100 Model 3s. And the first 15 that they took delivery of were garbage. And he documents all that. And he then goes to Tesla and says, we have 85 more on order.
Right.
We need a procedure here so that if you deliver us a bad car, and they're all bad, they have paint defects, they have fit and finish problems, you know, we can fix it. But you have to give us something. You give us like a charging cords or something to make up for it. Well,
right.
Tesla says, no, we're not going to have any such procedure. What you see is what you get, and you'll be happy with it. And if you're not happy with it, too damn bad. And so the guy cancels his order for the other 85 Model 3s. It causes him and his company a lot of disruption. They had a lot of people who wanted to in turn lease the cars and had to be told, we're sorry, you can't do it. It's a really important video to watch, and I hope you'll put that up there.
Yeah,
you know, by now,
I'm sorry, go ahead. Just to interrupt you real quick to go on that. It's funny too. This is one of two things I wanted to ask you about was this story. So they miss out on this Tesla misses out on this $5 million order of the remaining Model 3 vehicles. The owner of Next Move, which is the all-electric rental car company that was trying to place this order and basically just protect themselves from getting screwed out of cars of poor quality, said a couple of things, and I want to read two of those things real quick. The first is, Tesla Model 3 vehicles, which Next Move was supposed to take over after payment and only a short examination, sometimes had serious defects, defective tires, paint and body damages, defective charge controllers, wrong wiring harnesses, or missing emergency call buttons. Such quality defects would have endangered the safety of the customers and the profitability of Next Move, right? So this guy's now looking out for his own company and his own customers, saying, we can't take delivery of these because they pose a risk to us. Then he goes on to say this. He says, and I'm reading from a Zero Hedge article here, adding what could be, and this is Zero Hedge, not his quote, adding what could be illegal insult to injury, Next Move also claimed that when they tried to continue to buy some Model 3s from the company online, Tesla tried to sell them cars already registered to other buyers.
Yep.
And that they feared that this would have prevented them from taking advantage of government subsidies. So what do you make of that?
Listen, I would urge everyone, especially people who are invested in Tesla long, especially, you know, James Anderson of Bailey Gifford, to watch the entire 30-minute video. It has English subtitles. It's in German. But the guy is speaking very candidly to his audience. It is a exemplar of brand destruction. And Tesla delivered all these cars. It did what we thought it would be unable to do, but it did it at a huge cost of destroying its own brand. And that's why you see the European market shrinking on Tesla. A, you have a lot of very compelling competitors entering the market, and that's about to go into steroidal increase with Volkswagen coming on with its car. But B, you have disaffection. I don't know if you've seen the work of there's a Swedish guy, Jay Savolian. I can't pronounce his name, but he's done an incredible job. He got a car with horrible paint issues. He rounded up other people in Sweden that are discovering that if you drive a Tesla in snowy weather for a few miles, your paint starts to come off. And then they discover it was poorly done to begin with. Then they start talking to people all over Europe, then all over the world. And they have press everywhere about how poor the Tesla quality is, especially on paint issues. This is a cancer for Tesla. It's okay in In coastal California, Cultus Car Company can get away with this with its weather there, I suppose, and it's the mentality of the people. But for the real world, where you're looking for a reliable car and you have to drive it in adverse conditions of cold weather and snow, et cetera, it's not going to cut it. And Tesla is discovering this in Europe. And they're paying a terrible price for all the corners they cut. Predictable. But will it matter to the share price? Who knows when? Meanwhile, you know, Tesla promised months ago this hardware update from 2.5 to 3.0 for its autopilot. Nobody's gotten a new chip yet. When's Tesla going to do that, right? And of course, you know, Musk claiming on Autonomy Day that anyone relying on LiDAR is doomed. Well, you know, the trouble with making a claim like that is that the real players in autonomous driving are saying, A, it's not going to happen nearly as fast as Elon Musk says it's going to happen, and B, no, you cannot do it just with cameras, okay?
And so what's LiDAR? Explain LiDAR to somebody that doesn't know the story and what that means.
Okay, so LiDAR is it's short for something like light detection and ranging, okay? And what it does is it's a type of radar, basically, that enables you to pinpoint very accurately distances and dimensions of objects ahead of you. With a camera, you can't do that. You have to infer how far away they are, et cetera. But with LiDAR, you can. So it adds an entirely new dimension to the sensing ability of your car. And people, for example, GM and Waymo and everyone else, just about everyone else in this field of 15 or 16 people trying to develop autonomous driving uses LiDAR. But Musk has said, no, I'm smarter than them. You know, the cameras see like a human eye, and so cameras are good enough for us, and we're going to do it with cameras. And I've asked you to post an article as part of this podcast, you know, a link to an article about people who, you know, Musk has now poked a hornet's nest, because the people are not going to sit still and let him say that LiDAR is doomed and it's no good when they're insisting it's essential. He now has his competitors saying, look, this guy is full of it. He's writing checks he can't honor about full self-driving, about autopilot, and he's wrong about LiDAR. And I've asked you to post a blog post, an excellent article about is Musk right that you can forego LiDAR and still have a robust, safe, autonomous driving system? And the answer of the author, the conclusion he comes to, is absolutely not, and he explains why in great detail. But so please put that up there if you would be so kind. So that's, you know, I think
Meanwhile, we have new videos that have surfaced over the last 2 weeks. One, I think, from Moscow of a Tesla I guess allegedly was on autopilot, unable to avoid a tow truck that was in the left lane, between the left lane and the median, assisting another vehicle. And we see the Tesla, I believe it's a Model S, basically, you know, try to turn maybe at the last minute, but it just smashes right into the back of either the tow truck or the car that it was assisting. And then separate video of that caught the Tesla, of course, engulfed in flames shortly thereafter. So we had that video broke. And then there was another video last week came out from Puerto Rico, I believe, where a woman, I believe, was, and this is unconfirmed, but I believe she was trying to park using either autopilot or the assisted park. And regardless of what happened, it shows the car just going absolutely apeshit berserk. It crashes into the pickup truck that's in front of it, and then it shoots across the street and barely misses a pedestrian, takes out a street sign. It's not funny, but we've had so many instances over the last couple of years that really seem to show that Tesla is using people in this autopilot as a public beta test. And now we see the NHTSA. It was revealed over the last couple of weeks, may also be opening a formal investigation into the company. Did you want to comment on that? And
yeah, listen, you know, that brings me back to this Aaron Greenspan email exchange where Elon Musk wrote that Hothi almost killed Tesla employees. What was a sideswipe when Tesla hit one of our people could easily have been a death with 6 inches of difference. Well, that's bullshit, Elon. You're full of it. You won't show the videos because you know it's a lie. The police incident reports say it's a lie. You're a liar, okay? But it's a little bit of projection. I'll tell you what, you watch that Puerto Rico video and you want to see somebody that came within 6 inches of death.
Right.
Look at the poor guy who almost gets pinned against the wall right. by the Model X out of control.
Right.
That, there you go, sir. That is, that's what I call unethical and false, if you want to use those words. That's what I call endangering the public. And yeah, I hope the NHTSA wakes up. There is some evidence that they're stirring around. But maybe it's going to take a few more flaming wrecks and dead people for that to happen. And again, who knows when that will happen? Who knows when it will have any telling effect on the share price of this company? But those are existential risks Tesla faces. You mentioned another one, the Verna Unsworth case. Doesn't involve Tesla directly. It involves Elon Musk. But it goes to trial in December. It's in federal court. They've already continued the case once. I expect the court will stick to the trial schedule. I'm sure discovery is going on right now. And, you know, any sane lawyer would tell Elon Musk he needs to stroke a check to settle that case.
Right.
that's gonna result in more margin borrowing on his margin line, you know, and we'll get another existential risk to Tesla, which we've talked about before.
What do you put the chances of that actually going to trial at? 1%?
Oh, well, it'll go to trial. It's 100% it will go if they don't settle.
Well, oh, I mean versus
95%.
Settling.
You know, honestly, with this guy, there's no predicting. He doesn't do things that rational people do. So I can't say. I got to believe that, you know, this, ironically, this Epstein case has made an accusation of pedophilia even more costly if it's false, because you see the
right.
You see how devastating it properly was to Epstein's reputation for it to be true. And you know, to just go and accuse somebody of being a pedophile. And of course, it's interesting that Musk had a connection to Epstein too. You know, maybe there's a little projection going on there. You know, he knows Epstein is one, and he's been talking to Epstein about who knows what. Maybe Epstein's supposed ability to get cash from the Saudis for funding secured, and he accuses Unsworth of being a pedophile.
There was interesting reporting out last week that not only said that Epstein was involved somehow in advising Tesla or Musk on, I think, who the new chairman of the board should be, and was kind of, in very vague detail, points out that, you know, maybe helping the company with some type of financing, and was linked loosely to the Saudis. And then there was also another interesting part of the original article, which I think was, I forget who broke it, it was either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. But there was another interesting part of that initial article, which made the illusion that Epstein has quite a lot of dirt on, or had quite a lot of dirt on specifically Silicon Valley you know, tech pioneers, I think was how they put it, on drug use and other things. And so you can't help but wonder, of course, there's no evidence, but you can't help but wonder how deep that rabbit hole goes. And who knows if we'll find out.
Let me be clear. I'm 100% certain that Elon, well, you can't be certain. I would never suggest for a moment that he's a pedophile. He surely is not. Okay?
Right.
And I don't mean, but it's clear that he consorted with Jeffrey Epstein, about who a lot of things were already known that were very unsavory,
right,
in 2018. And it's clear that Epstein had connections with Mohammed bin Salman. Is that the guy's name?
The
Saudi
prince.
Arabian,
who
controls all the money. MBS. And it's clear that Musk did so and visited Epstein at a time. Well, okay, maybe Musk denies visiting Epstein. Epstein says that Musk came to visit him at a time when Musk was desperate to shake the money tree, to shake the Sheikh's money tree, and have his funding secured, have some substance to it, because he had just gone out there and had said, funding secured, no
right.
contingency, blah, blah, blah. One contingency, shareholder approval. It doesn't look good. It's not a good look, Elon. Okay, and so our great visionary hero is now seen consorting with, you know, underworld types. And Elon Musk addressed me finally for the first time directly, almost directly, in this same exchange with Aaron Greenspan, and because Greenspan copied me on the email, and Elon saw that. And here's what Elon wrote. So you called me Mr. Fossey before. It's Mr. Fossil, by the way. He said, interesting that Mr. Fossil, who was on the bad side in the Enron fraud case, is copied on this email. Why is that? Fossil is in no way objective. He has laboriously, that's kind of emphasized, long history of attacking Tesla, major conflicting investments in oil and gas, and has repeatedly made false statements about Tesla to support his short position. I hope one day he gets the help he needs. Which, you know, a couple of things. First, Mr. Fossil, being Lawrence Fossey, Fossey comma L, my nickname has been Fossil forever. And, you know, my chemistry lab partners all called me Fossil. My kids think that it's hilarious that I am a fossil. So to me, it's like, wow, that's a term of endearment. Thank you, Elon. Second, in the oil and gas investments, where would Elon Musk be without oil and gas investments? How the hell do people charge his cars if they're not using fossil fuels? Mostly that's what's used,
right,
fossil fuels to power Teslas. Please don't, you know, yes, it's great that in the Pacific Northwest we have, you know, water, and in some places wind and tiny amounts of solar to power them. But Elon, without fossil fuels, sorry, you'd be all the trucks that haul away the broken cars for you are running with diesels. Haven't you noticed
right.
that? Having, you know, lots all over the country where you're having to charge your cars with diesel generators.
Right.
Come on, give me a break. And by the way, if you're so down on fossil fuels, what are you doing consorting with MBS, trying to get money from him and the Saudis to power your investments? Huh? I mean, please, again, this guy has some projection difficulties, doesn't he? He has some projection issues. As for being on the wrong side, the bad side in the Enron fraud case, well, actually, I did represent Enron, but I represented Enron only after it went bankrupt, which meant that I had never represented it before it went bankrupt, or I would never have been hired. I wouldn't have been allowed to do so. Okay, now, a law firm I worked at represented Enron. I left that law firm a year before Enron went bankrupt. I never billed a single minute to Enron. I never worked on any Enron matter. And when I had my own law firm, I actually sued Enron on behalf of a client who was stiffed by them and trying to collect money for some work it had done. And I had to get that conflict cleared before I could be hired by Enron to help the Enron bankruptcy trustee recover hundreds of millions of dollars, which it did in the bankruptcy proceedings, so that it could go to the creditors to whom it was properly payable. So I was actually on the good side in the Enron fraud case, Elon, in case you want to get your facts straight. But thank you for defaming me too, okay? Always nice to have that one in the pocket. Finally, he says, I hope one day he gets the help he needs. Oh, he says, I've made false statements about Tesla. Just, Elon, write me a note and tell me what – by the way, I wrote back to him and I said, I was on the bad side in the Enron fraud case, would you go ahead and tell me what your evidence is? My first time to ever communicate directly with him. No response. He's never responded. But he says I made false statements. Well, tell me what they are. You know, I make mistakes when I wrote. I always corrected them if somebody called them to my attention.
Sure.
If I've made a false statement about Tesla, a false statement, let me know what it was and I'll go on the record and fix it. Okay? But you better tell me what it is first. And then he says, I hope one day he gets the help he needs. Well, again, let's talk about projection here, right? I guess we could all use a little help, Elon. And guess what? You could too. So.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I think the idea of conflating the fact that, you know, you work for somebody that has some investments in oil and gas with, you know, that you're an advocate for the industry that is directly out to, you know, be a skeptic of Tesla and go head to head with the electric car company that's trying to save the world. I mean, that narrative, the reality of the situation is this. I mean, all you got to do is Google Tesla being charged and pictures of Teslas being charged by diesel generators are going to pop up. The reality of the situation is like this idiot Ocasio-Cortez said about the Philadelphia oil refinery fire, which was a horrible travesty. You know, oh, we got to get off fossil fuels. It's like it's as if that has anything to do with what happened, right? And she doesn't realize. Then she gets into her gas car. It's like de Blasio takes the fucking SUV to the gym every day, parks his SUV. Sorry for cursing. Parks his SUV outside of the YMCA. Elon Musk's flying around on a jet that's using hydrocarbon-based fuels. You know, so I'm not sure how much longer he's going to be able to kind of virtue signal and peddle this. Yes, we all want to reduce carbon emissions. Yes, we all want to, you know, take rational steps to combat climate change, right? But I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to hide behind that cloak of, yeah, I'm trying to save the world, and anybody that gets in my way is a bad person that's trying, you know, Lawrence Fossey just wants more oil and gas. That's all you want.
By the way, Chris, the portfolio I manage, about 5% is oil and gas. So we're underinvested in it. We are also invested in electric vehicle charging infrastructure. So, this guy is just a nasty piece of work who will distort anything, say anything when he doesn't know what he's talking about. I guess I should stop talking about him. It's interesting that I've gotten so under his skin, though. But I just wanted him to know. I appreciate him calling me Fossil. It's an endearing nickname for me, and I'm touched by it. And I also, it's nice that he wants to, he thinks I need to get help. I didn't know he cared.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you one more question, then I'm going to let you go because it's Saturday and you've been kind enough with your time, which I appreciate, and I know my listeners certainly appreciate. Going forward now, into Q3 and Q4, going into the back end of the year, it'll probably be a little while before we speak again. Just give me some insight as to, from the investment standpoint, what you personally are kind of looking at. What are the metrics that you're following? You already touched on what you think Q3 will bring a little bit, but going forward, what's kind of your top two or three things that you're going to be keeping an eye on right now?
You mean Tesla-wise?
Tesla-wise, yeah.
Okay, well, first, you know, the great disclaimers are always important here. I'm not qualified to give investment advice to anybody else.
Neither am I.
I can tell you what I personally do. I personally go long. With Tesla, I buy options that are dated as far out as I can get them because I think time is on our side. But in the short run, it's, you know, this stock levitates thanks to a religious fervor. I also, you know, like doing covered calls just because, you know, most options expire worthless. And I believe the general trend will be downward and you can protect yourself with those. And it's a way to earn a little income in the meantime. When it all goes to hell, who knows? I think that the realization will hit people that the year over year growth is over when we see the Q3 results. But, you know, Tesla will have the more stories to tell. Shanghai, is anybody going to believe they can make any money there? Well, some people may. The Model Y, talk about the most unimpressive reveal I've ever seen was the Model Y. Elon, you know, he unveils, he says, the Model Y. Like he almost, like he didn't buy it either. And they had to have, you know, people crawl out of the car in the darkness because it can't seat seven people like he claims. If they, surely they'll produce a Model Y that's not nearly as ugly as the one they showed on the stage that night, or ungainly, but hard to imagine that it's going to come into just a whirlwind of competitors who will be there at the same time. I don't, and it will cannibalize the Model 3, but that's going to be yet another narrative that he'll try to keep alive. Who knows what could happen in the meantime? The Solar City lawsuit, the Unsworth lawsuit, the 600 other lawsuits, including many Lemon lawsuits, the various class actions about autopilot, the paint issues in Europe, the NHTSA investigation about these safety claims, the FTC looking into possibly all the inflated FSD claims, Tesla people who have paid for FSD and not getting it, scratching their head and wondering why not. Lots of things can happen, but I just... there's no rationality to this stock. It may take a macro market, recession to finally have any effect. So I would say be careful, go long, and hedge.
All right, Mr. Fossil, thank you so much.
All right,
kindly,
pleasure, Chris,
for coming on the podcast. I always appreciate you taking your time. I know you're a busy man, and we'll look to have you back hopefully in a couple months and touch base again.
All right, terrific. Have a great weekend.
All
thanks,
right.
Chris.
You too, my friend. That was the one, the only Montana Skeptic coming to you live naturally from an underground bunker in Montana somewhere. If you would, first off, if you are new, if you're a new listener and you don't know what the fuck is going on, check out the hashtag on Twitter. If you go into the Twitter search bar, you put in the $TSLAQ. And all that is people that trade stocks, they use $, then the stock symbol to kind of tag their posts similar to a hashtag. And the skeptics of Tesla have appended a Q to the end of that. So it's $TSLAQ. And the Tesla Q community is where you're basically going to find skeptics similar to Mr. Fossey and people like myself that have, and Mr. Hothy that he spoke about, that are doing their own research and trying to kind of... trying to uncover the objective truth about things, which may or may not always be convenient to Mr. Musk and the people that support the company. I want to thank one more time my patrons for signing up and donating a recurring monthly sum to support the podcast. If you enjoy the content, I would encourage you to do that. I keep getting blasts to put ads in the middle of these podcasts from Podbean and other places. I refrain from doing that because I like to not have stuff... I do speak in the beginning, I do speak at the end, but I don't like things to interrupt the flow of the podcast, so there will never be advertisements in the middle of my podcasts, and my patrons make that possible. But right now, it's the weekend, folks. I'm out of here. Peace.